Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I love food, don't you? It's why I'm so delighted to bring you today's guest. Chef Jordan is an ultra-talented young chef that has worked in the food and hospitality industry for the last decade between three different regions of the South. Now he's here with us in the Valley. He's currently focused on expanding his ingredient knowledge and critiquing his craft using the freshest of ingredients, from growing his own to building knowledge of the bountiful edible forage this region has to offer, spending his time at One Tribe Farm finding himself, and an appreciation for the earth's plenty. Glad to have you on today, Chef Jordan. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. It's very nice to be here.
Yes, it is exciting to have you here. I have to say, you're the first chef we have had on this show, so that makes me super pumped about this today.
That makes me excited. You're the first person I've had a podcast with, so.
All right, we're celebrating first today. Speaking of first, that's the main question I want to start with is, how did you first find your passion for food? Was it at an early age?
It was definitely at an early age. So I spent the summers up here in Virginia. I grew up in Florida and I always gravitated towards the kitchen. I was a chunky little kid, so food was like my thing. But especially when I started coming up here to Virginia, my grandmother, who I would stay with, she was always in the kitchen just preparing these awesome Southern foods. And it really grabbed my attention. And luckily enough, she was around long enough for me to finally focus on actually making that what I wanted to do. And sort of what drives my passion now, just trying to just recreate some of the dishes that she's done. She was one of those cooks that would stand over the stovetop with a cigarette in her mouth, just stirring the gravy. And I have her gravy recipe. And I think the only thing that is missing is the ashes of a Virginia Slim. I can never get it as good as hers. And I think that's what it is.
You keep trying though, don't you?
Yeah.
It's
getting there, but.
You're going to get it.
It's one of the fond memories I have. That's basically where I found it. And then once I found out that I was actually pretty good at it, I mean, it's just easy. You have to develop a flavor, palate. And you just go off of that, and it's all about experimenting and whatnot. That's why I gravitated more towards food, the culinary side and not the baking side. The culinary side, just cooking, it's easy. Like, I used to watch her just throw stuff together. She would look in the pantry and just sit there, rub her chin a little bit, and then make something absolutely amazing out of it. And that always blew my mind. And so once I got good at that, it really sealed the deal. This is what I wanted to do.
That's really interesting to me. So she was just, it sounds like, creative herself. She didn't necessarily follow the rules of a recipe.
No, not at all.
Right.
She did not care about, if you drop food on the floor, you're eating it. She didn't care about anything. She was actually a very creative person. So it made sense.
That's incredible. I love that so much. Well, then that sparked your interest to continue that pursuit further. And you went to the culinary arts program in Triple Tech in Mount Jackson, and then competed in national culinary competitions. I've never met anybody who's done anything like that before you. I mean, can you talk about that experience a little bit? Is it like Top Chef we see on TV, you know, where you have
it? It was very much like that.
Really?
Triple Tech was awesome. I had a really, really awesome chef. Her name was Paige Cross, Chef Cross. She was very, very good at what she did. I can tell you right now, some of the kids in that class, well, including me, I don't know how she didn't lose it. She had a lot to deal with. She definitely had her hands full, but she
was herding cats, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. But she did a wonderful job. There's a couple kids that came out of that class that actually stayed with the culinary, and they're all doing relatively well. My best friend and business partner, I met him through that, and we've just been side by side ever since. Yeah, and he does amazing food too. So it's she did a good job really opening our eyes and teaching us new techniques. So when I did, so I went to Johnson & Wales for a year down in Charlotte, and when I went there, it was just the amount of knowledge that I had compared to the other kids that were there was unreal. And it was all thanks to her. And I gotta give some credit to Joe Wilkins. He basically taught me a lot when I was working at Joe's Steakhouse in Woodstock at the time too. So it was basically the best of both worlds. I had a chef at work that was really good and really tried to critique my craft, and I had a chef at school that was doing the same thing, and they never clashed or anything. Everything that they said went right with each other's.
Very so complimentary. It
made it easy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, what an incredible experience.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The cooking competitions.
Yeah.
So they have a regional, a district, and states, and then nationals. Regional was just the other schools in the area. And of course, us being the powerhouse that we were, we had a lot of talented kids. We ran through regionals, we ran through districts. And then Zach and I ended up going to states. And I did it post-grad. So doing it post-grad, I had to beat out every single person. There was no, in order for me to go to nationals, I had to beat the number one person that won states. They did it sort of differently for me.
Okay.
I guess they had post-grads before, but it wasn't like there was post-grads that were thrown in the mix all the time. So I had to be the very best. I don't want to necessarily say it like that, but, which it was a cool experience. States was a lot of fun. It was out of Roanoke. I think there were seven of us that came from the culinary program. And Zach got fourth. I got first. And then a buddy of mine named Cody Fitchett, he got first in baking. And those are basically the only placements. And so Cody and I ended up, since we got first, we ended up going to nationals. And it was a lot like Chopped or Top Chef, what you see. The night before, they would give us three ingredient baskets, and we'd have to study them and basically ahead of time come up with a way of preparing them in our minds. We had certain things that we had to do. We had to make a consommé, which is just a stock, a flavored stock. We had to do knife cuts. In order to show off our knife cuts, we used the consommé. We had to break down chickens, and then basically had to prepare a dish with whatever ingredients they had in the basket. And the reason they gave us three of them is so they didn't want us to have a really good idea of what we were going to do. They had to confuse us a little bit, which was pretty cool. It made it more like Chops. So it was a lot of stress before, like, oh my gosh, there's three of them. What am I going to do? So you had to sit down and actually plan what you would do for each one. And then luckily for me, I got my favorite basket. So that really helped out.
And then
nationals was the same way. Nationals took place in Kansas City. It was a lot of fun in Kansas City. We went out and we stayed in an apartment for a week, and they did it in the Kansas City Convention Center. And it wasn't just culinary. It was a trade. It's a trade school. So all the trades that you can think of, they were all participating in these competitions. So there's just thousands of kids, and it was slightly overwhelming, but it was such a great experience. It was awesome. But it was basically the same way. They tried to confuse us with three different baskets. They had judges walking around us the whole time trying to make us nervous, which actually helped me because I always had a chef breathing down my neck. So I was used to it. So I was able to hold a conversation with the judges and actually just casually cook. I was having a lot of fun, and there was no need to be stressed out. Even though, I mean, being that young, it was kind of overwhelming. You're in a spotlight at that point. I think I went against 40 people in nationals, and I went against postgrads only at that point. So there was people that were in Culinary Institute of America, Johnson & Wales. Like they were actually people that were way older than me. I think I was the youngest by 7 or 8 years in that. And it really, really made me want to do really good. It really drove me to just the best. And I ended up coming out 11th. which I wasn't disappointed with at all. I mean, 11th out of 40 some people was pretty cool. It was nice to come back with that one. I wanted to be in the top 10, but you know, you can't win them all, I guess.
No, you can't win them all. You can't win them all. Laffers, just so you know, he is recording right now at One Tribe Farm. So they have a beautiful, serene location. And if you're experiencing any kind of audio spottiness, it's because they're in beautiful country. And so we just want, we want you to stay tuned, because there's a lot more we want to share with Chef Jordan, but we just want to help you feel comfortable about understanding why it might feel, body might feel just a little bit slightly off. But stay with us, because this next question is a burning question for me that I want to know. And I'm sure the laughers would love to know too. What these competitions, this, you had to make some amazing dishes. What is the dish that you are most proud of in those competitions and why?
Oh, in the competitions, the one I'm most proud of was the one I did at States. It was just the way I plated it. So my buddy Zach and I were actually right across from each other at States. So whenever one of us was doing something wrong, like, we give each other eyes, we couldn't talk. So it made it comfortable. Cause I mean, I was right next to him cooking every day. So having him right next to me really helped out. And I'm sure I helped him out with that. But so we had to do asparagus. Our ingredients were an airline chicken breast, which we had to break down from the chicken, which an airline chicken breast is just the drumstick left on the breast. Okay. We had to make a rice pilaf, which is where our knife cuts came in to play, as well as the consomme. And then we had to do something with asparagus. And I don't think I'm missing something. Maybe I think we might have had an au jus or a gravy on it. That was 9 years ago. But the way I plated it, it was just, they had these little ceramic baking pans that were, they were literally the size of your hand, not even, maybe smaller, like 4 inches and probably 3 inches deep. And I had one staring at me the whole time, because you had to come up with a creative way to plate it. And I had one staring at me the whole time. So what I did was I just layered the rice, and then I put the asparagus in between, and then I put more rice on top of it. And I flipped it over onto the plate and had it stand up like that. And I leaned the chicken breast right on top of it. And it really popped. And I hope that was one of the reasons why I won, because I was very proud of that dish. That was probably the proudest I've ever been when it came to serving a dish. And it's one that I'll keep with me. I can still picture it. Like it was yesterday. It was awesome.
So it sounds like, no,
it was so nerve-wracking though.
Was it? What?
Yeah, it was.
What do you mean it was nerve-wracking?
Just waiting for the outcome, because it was probably about 6 or 7 hours before. Or no, I think there's another group that had to go after us, and so it was just like a long day of waiting before you got to find out who won and whatnot. This, the pressure just really started to build the more you sat there, the more you thought about it. But it was, I mean, that was part of the experience though, and that's happy I was able to go through that, because it makes me, like, I can sit down and watch Chopped and be like, oh, I know exactly what he's feeling right now. And yeah, sweat's just beating down people's faces. I know that feeling. It's fun in the moment. It makes you really want to grind and just be the best you can be.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a little bit different in that when you're waiting for the results, the judges aren't coming out in front of the whole line of competitors and giving results though.
How they did that was, yeah, we were in an amphitheater with everybody. It was, they went by category.
Okay.
So like auto repair went first and so on and so forth. Culinary was, I think, fourth or fifth, but we had to sit there for the whole ceremony, and there was just thousands of kids in there. And we were sitting in the stands. I couldn't even see the stage, honestly. Could barely see the stage. But when they started going through culinary and they called my name, it was a long walk down there, but it was awesome. It was pretty cool.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
What were you going to say? You have to do what?
We had to walk down. We had to go backstage and we had to all get in line and get ready to go be put on stage. And it was just like, just so anxious. You're sitting there shaking, like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to call my mom and tell my mom and dad what happened. Like, it was such an overwhelming experience. It was awesome.
I love it. It sounds, in part, what you're proud of is not only was your dish delicious, but the visual presentation of it, if I'm hearing you right, in terms.
Yeah. Well, you want to make, your whole goal is to make it visually appealing. People eat with their eyes first, even though I think that's a load of crap. You can have a bowl of anything and it'd be the best thing in your life, and it's just be soup and bowl or something like that. It's not really the presentation, but that's what really grabs people. And people that say they're foodies and whatnot, they see something that's really attractive and they gravitate toward it, and you've already won them over at that point. If your dish is really attractive, the bias that people have towards it being a great dish is already there and set. So it just helps you out. But like I said, you can put some of the best food in the world, just slop it on a plate and people would be just as happy.
That's right.
So it's,
yeah.
So, I mean, I was happy about how it looked and whatnot. And that was like the first time I was really worried about plating. And it was cool to be very proud of a dish because, I mean, like I said before that, I wasn't really worried about plating. We always had an expediter at the kitchens that we were at. I mean, in school, we worried about it. We practiced it because we knew that was coming, but it was something that I never thought that would be so important. And I tell you what, the first time I've tried plating it, the rice fell apart on me and I was just losing it. So to get it to finally stay was actually one of the better moments. So,
yeah, exactly. I'm glad that one worked out. That's really fun. That's a really cool experience. You have had a lot of cool experiences. You've cooked in the South for the last decade, and I'm wondering, that's a good bit of time. So how have the experiences there influenced the dishes that you now make here in the Valley, or have they not?
Ooh, that's a good question. Definitely. Sorry, my dog's coming.
That's all right. We're doing life here.
Definitely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Virginia's for laughers. We do life and we laugh. All right. And we love dogs, or I do.
So definitely they have influenced what I'm, how I look at dishes, especially some of the finer dining places that I worked. And then some of the ingredients, like sweetbreads. It's a gland that's around the neck muscle of a cow. They're amazing. I've never worked with them before until I went down to Charlotte, and they were absolutely amazing. And I never thought about using them.
Yeah. What was that called again? I'm sorry. What was that?
Sweetbreads.
Sweetbreads. Okay. Yes. Please tell us more. Yes.
It's one of those things that people usually throw away. Some crazy person along the way tried to eat them, and it's a really weird looking thing. It looks like a brain membrane almost. It's quite ugly to look at, but it's very, very nice when it's fried up and done nice. Yeah, exactly. Just some of the things that I was taught, like pasta making, just braising down certain meats, pairings with wines, pairings with beers. The last place I worked at before moving back to Virginia was a brewery. I was a sous chef at a brewery. And I mean, we worked with Wagyu beef, constantly bringing in vegetables from local farms. Never worked with kaolettes before, and kaolettes are basically a mix between a Brussels and kale, and they're purple leaves. And it's just something that was really flavorful, and it really opened my eyes to other ingredients, especially fish. Charlotte was, it's not relatively close to the sea, but I mean, comparatively speaking to out here, it was pretty close to the sea. We would get fresh fish all the time. There's a big box truck that would come and just drop off fish, and you get 60 pounds of fish and you go in and you break them down. You learn how to break down different fish. I had a lot of good mentors that were in Charlotte, and they sort of guided me along the way.
Wow.
So yes, it does. It did come around full circle. I do use a lot of the techniques and the flavors that I learned down there to bring here, and being in the, just being in this area makes me want to utilize the ingredients that it has to offer more and more.
I like that so much. Speaking of ingredients, well, let me broaden this question just a little bit. What is one tool, spice, or ingredient you cannot live without?
Butter.
Butter.
Butter for sure.
Hands down, it's, no question.
Hands down. Just adds a nice creamy fattiness and flavor all around to dishes. Whether you drop a pat of butter in something that's cooling down and you whisk it in, just gives you a nice mouthfeel and it doesn't really separate. Or whether you're putting butter in your mashed potatoes, it's just, I don't know. It's one of those things. It's almost like salt.
Yes, I'm a fan.
Yeah, it makes it so much better. It's just, it's one of those things. Honestly, I feel like I should have said salt, but butter is one of those things. Like I can always use butter in a certain way and I will never regret using it.
I love it. So everybody, laughers, you know, in Chef Jordan's, dishes, there will be butter.
Yes.
There will be butter. What are your favorite? Yes, there will be. What are your favorite ingredients and pairings for food and also wine? And let's throw in beer too, since you have some experience with beer. Because that's new.
Well, some of my favorite ingredients to use with beer and wine. Well, beef has to be one of them. Beef is something that, whether you're slow cooking it or you're enjoying a glass of wine or a glass of beer with it, it's one of those things that it pairs really well. Braising short ribs or marinating London broils. It's something that is commonly used when you cook beef, especially when you're doing pastas or like braising stuff for a long time. It's something that I really, really think makes a dish pop, you know what I mean? Or adds just an underlying flavor that enhances it overall.
Excellent. I like that. Now you probably also serve, people that have some vegetarian requests. Can you speak a little bit on maybe a dish pairing with food and wine for the vegetarians out there that might be listening?
Yeah. Well, vegetables are best served fresh. I love throwing them into meals and whatnot, but there's nothing better than a fresh vegetable. It's just the word fresh in my mind makes me think of vegetables immediately. It's the nice crisp bite that you get out of it, the nice juice that comes with it. It's just, I love fresh vegetables, but ratatouille has got to be one of my favorite meals. And that, when you speak of fresh vegetables, I mean, you have fresh squash, fresh zucchini, fresh eggplant, fresh tomatoes. It's very good. And fresh herbs, honestly. And with a glass of white wine or a glass of red wine, it goes really well together. It's a dish that I don't think too many people understand, because a lot of people see vegetables and they stick their nose up immediately. And I think that is because they had parents that either bought steam in the bag vegetables and never salt and peppered it or added butter or
back to that.
Vegetables are something that when people cook them are just very bland sometimes. And I think that's what drives people away. Like my stepdad hates Brussels because his grandmother used the bag Brussels, never fresh vegetables or never fresh Brussels. So there's a big difference between those. And, When you do something right and you use a fresh ingredient, it usually will taste better.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's so true. That about the vegetables. I find that I love to saute them with some onions and some butter. Speaking of that, it's much better than the steam in the bag. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What is the best dish you've ever made and how does it compare to the best dish you've ever had?
Oh my gosh, that's a really hard question. So many dishes over the year.
Right.
Wow.
Because you've had a lot of dishes. Well, yeah.
Yeah. I've had a lot of dishes. There's a couple in there. Okay. So Zach and I, for Twice Baked Provisions first dinner, actually, Zach and I had a guy in Timberville. He asked us to do a farm-to-table dinner for him, and we were going to do braised short ribs, but we had technical difficulties and that didn't go as planned, so we took the short ribs and we ended up turning it into a pasta, and it came out really nicely. And it's one of those things, like, you have an image of what you really want it to do, and then something totally messes it up, and you're like, oh, well, what do we do from here? And something that you have to deal with very often in the restaurant industry is thinking on your feet and trying to figure out how are we going to do this. You got to make it happen. And yep. I think that should be the slogan of Twice Baked Provisions, honestly, is making it happen. That's what Zach and I do.
Make it happen.
Yeah, we run into things so often, it's just make it happen. You just got to make it happen.
Calling an audible. My son plays football. Calling audibles.
But he had grown microgreens for that dinner, which are relatively easy. I didn't know it was that easy of a process. This man grew some microgreens for it, and it was sunflower microgreens. And so the dish.
I have to just pause there for a second. I've never heard the term microgreens. I can't be the only one.
All right, so
a microgreen. Listening. Yeah, what is that?
A microgreen is basically the plant when it's first starting to grow. So like when tomato plants first break the surface, beet plants first break the surface.
Okay.
Yeah, they're about an inch tall. And certain plants have really, I don't want to say meaty, but like you get a lot of nice crunch and texture to them. You can have a microgreen salad and it'd be the best salad you've ever had, honestly. But so we garnished it with that. I think we did it with like a ricotta and some olive oil, and it came out really nicely. But on the other hand, I've had a couple duck dishes. I love duck. I am a big fan of duck.
It is probably duck too.
Yeah. It's safe to say it's my favorite red meat. It's definitely my favorite bird. But there's a couple duck dishes that I've done throughout the year that it's sort of one of those things that every time I do another duck dish, I try to one up the last one.
That's so good.
I feel, the people that get to eat duck that I've prepared are very fortunate, because like I said, it's just, I got to make it better than the last one. And it's so easy. In my mind, it's easy. Yeah. But it's one of those, it's got a lot of natural flavor. Duck fat is like pork fat. It's just melt in your mouth. I can just eat it with
watering.
A spoon. Yeah. My favorite duck dish, I guess you could say, was one that I did when I was working at Joe's Steakhouse. We took a blueberry liqueur and sun-dried cranberries, craisins. I don't like calling them craisins, but sun-dried cranberries. And we just reduced that down, and then we did it over a parsnip puree. And I think we had broccolini. It was parsnip puree, broccolini, and the duck breast. And then we did that blueberry liqueur glaze over top of it. And it was absolutely amazing. Just blew my mind. And being so young and witnessing a dish that tasted that good was just amazing. Now, my favorite dish, there's this restaurant in Charlotte called Soul Gastro Lounge. They have this appetizer. It's a bone marrow appetizer. And I think it was just like a dressed arugula salad over top of it, but it was the first time I actually had eaten bone marrow for the, like, actual bone marrow. I never really tried it before.
I didn't either.
The amount of umami, which is one of the best flavors you can have. It's just an overwhelming mouth sensation, as well as just a savory type of flavor. Just the amount of umami that came out of that dish was just amazing. And then the very next night, my good friend Ivan created it was a foie gras. This has to be the best dish I've ever had. He created a foie gras dish. My mom came into town. Okay. And all the chefs, whenever someone's mother would come into town, especially someone that worked in the kitchen, all the chefs would get together and create like a small menu for them.
That's so nice.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. My mom came down all the time.
I know. And she found that too. Out. Landon, if you're listening, you can become a chef too, in addition to software engineer. I love this idea. Oh, yes. Please tell us more.
So we would just, like, they would, these parents would come in, like these moms would come in, and we'd just blow them out of the water with dishes, just nonstop dishes. And it's just like, you could see their faces just like, oh my God, just every time they ate something. It's one of those things, like, we really found enjoyment out of it, because I mean, one of the things I really enjoy is seeing people's faces light up when they taste a dish, when they taste something that's really, really good to them. And like, you know, they're thinking that it's extraordinary just by the look on their face. And that's how you know you've done it. But he created this foie gras dish. He did pickled grapes, which what he did was he halved them. Well, he peeled the grapes, which I didn't know you could peel a grape, or it was that practical. He did it really quickly. I could tell you right now, I couldn't peel a grape that quickly. Okay. I'd probably get frustrated after five and throw them all away.
Okay.
Or just not do it.
Before you tell us more too, because I want to hear the rest of that dish. I don't know what a foie gras is though. So can you, yes.
Foie gras is it's slightly frowned upon. Okay. So what they do is they force feed ducks and they fatten their liver. And, so their liver just has like a very, once again, umami taste to it. It's very savory, pretty fatty. But it holds its structure. So you can cut scores into it and grill it. And when you do that, all the fat will just ooze out of it, create an oil in the bottom of the pan. So what he did.
Okay, that helps.
So he pan seared that, and then he took the oil that came out of it that had rendered out of it, and then he made a broth with it. So he served the foie gras with two pieces of crostini, the pickled grapes, and I think he put caviar on top of it, and it was just absolutely amazing. It was unbelievable experience. He was a chef for Laurent Tordel in New York, so he had some really good experience. And it showed every, I would make sure I sat down whenever my mom came in because I was trying to get some of what he was making too.
Everybody's going to want some of what he's making. It sounds like.
Exactly.
You know, go ahead.
So that was probably my favorite meal I had working at High Brewery in Charlotte. That's where I was a sous chef at. It was just an unbelievable experience because the amount of talent that was there. And, it was every day was something else. I mean, even if it was just family meal or one of the chefs just messing around, like, a Wagyu Big Mac was one of the best things I had there too. Wagyu is like the best rated beef you can get. It's the intramuscular fat. When you look at a ribeye and you see all the little strains of fat that are in it, that's intramuscular fat. So Wagyu beef doesn't really move that often and it's fed really nice, fatty, nutritious food. So it just sits there and it collects inside of its muscles. And so we ground some of that up and we made a burger out of it. And we actually made a Big Mac out of it. And it was just an unbelievable experience. So I'm getting really hungry just thinking about it.
I am too. Why did we schedule this interview around the lunch hours?
Right now. Should have eaten before I started this.
Right. I'm ready to hop in my car right now and head over to One Tribe Farm and have some Chef Jordan. Plus, I think right now what I'm thinking is there's moms listening to this podcast and learning about what all the chefs do and how they get together and make all this food for their moms. I'm probably going to have moms everywhere going, don't worry about college, go to chef school.
I could definitely see that.
Now that they
it's funny. My mom really loved bragging about it. I mean, she's my number one fan. So she gets a lot of, I spoil her. She gets a lot of the taste tests and stuff like that. And she's really spoiled by me, but she really enjoyed that over the years, being able to come down and just, and some of the restaurants I worked at previous to Hyde, was the same way. So we would go restaurant hopping down in Charlotte, and ultimately some of the places we either paid for our food or we paid for our alcohol. And so you sit down and the chef will send out three or four plates and then you just pay for the two bottles of wine that you drank. And that was it. Because it was a system like that. Everybody was a tight knit community and everybody took care of each other, which was awesome. And I was really happy to show her that. Because I mean, in her eyes, I imagine she thought I was just slinging burgers in some restaurant somewhere. But no, like the amount of camaraderie and what could be done in a restaurant really opened her eyes once she came down and visited in Charlotte, and I was able to take her around to places and stuff.
And get a real sense for your career and passion.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Bennies, mm-hmm. if I just may add.
Yeah.
I might have to talk to that son of mine about this software engineer career now.
Oh, yeah. It's not a bad field. It's not a bad field to do.
I mean,
you're constantly eating.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. I had to get a Peloton to help me out with that.
No kidding.
Oh, my gosh. Well, in addition to preparing food for the guests at One Tribe Farm, you also offer private gourmet chef services in the Shenandoah Valley with your company Twice Baked Provisions. And you mentioned your business partner. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is you can provide and how you can work with people or how you work with people?
Yeah, of course. So basically what we do, we offer services as we come into your house and we just prepare you a meal. So usually how it happens is people will reach out to me. And then within the next couple days or even couple weeks, we come up with a menu, go off of their budget and what they want to spend. And basically I just try to show off, just try to come up with a funky menu, stuff that I've never done before or stuff that I'm comfortable with that I know I can knock out of the park. It's honestly, comparatively speaking to working in a restaurant, it's such a blessing. I get to do whatever I want right now. And it's awesome. Like people pay for me to just mess around in the kitchen. And I know that doesn't sound good, but I just mess around in the kitchen. And I create some awesome things. And I'm very, very happy that I get to share that with people. So yeah, people just reach out and we'll create a menu, usually between 3 and 5 courses. And sometimes they don't want 3 and 5 courses. Sometimes they just want a nice, elegant family meal. Give them 2 entree options or 2 protein options. Cook them different ways or vegetarians, depending on their preferences. And just some really good sides to go with it. Just to take the pressure off of the mom that always cooks or the dad that always cooks. You know, some people just like that. But yeah, so TwiceBakedProvisions.com. There's a form that you can fill out, and basically it narrows, or there's just a field. It gives me a field to work with. There's a lot of questions on there that once you answer them, it gives me a lot more details about what exactly you're looking for. So when I do contact you, it's not like I'm just clueless to what you're trying to do. There's already a set agenda and stuff like that, which makes it very helpful. Yeah. And so we'll go to people's houses, we'll prepare and cook them hopefully the best meal they've had in their life, and if not in their life, that they've had in a long time. So it's, like I said, it's very fun.
Yeah.
And just working with my best friend, it makes it so easy. Him and I, we just laugh and joke the whole time. I mean, we have to be serious sometimes, but can you really be that serious with your best friend? I don't think so. it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, work should be fun, I think. Mm-hmm. I think work should be fun. And laughers, we will put in the show notes their website, just so you know that. So be looking for that. And as we begin to wrap up here, I'm curious about you mentioning that you're finding yourself on One Tribe Farm. I think our listeners would be really interested in learning more about what that experience is for you right now. What are you learning about yourself on the farm?
Well, so basically my idea of this farm is basically a healing place. Whether or not that's how they want it to sell or that's how they want to sell it. But this place brings me a lot of peace and it eases my mind. I'm able to just let go of a lot of things that constantly fill my head. And for me to get into a good headspace, especially having a business that's quite busy. And when I was working 60 hours in a restaurant every week and trying to balance both of those, there was no time for me to release anything. And I'm one of those people that will just keep pushing stuff down until unfortunately the lid comes off. So it's basically, I've been trying to find just peace, and That's I've come a long way since I've been out of here. It's very easy to just sit there and actually not meditate, but calmly think about what my next move is, calmly think about the situations that I could be in or the situation that I am in, and figure things out. just, I mean, they talk a lot about animals being, they basically are therapy. I got my two dogs in here right now, and it's just, I couldn't be happier being able to work with my dogs every day. It was tough leaving them and working 14 hours and then coming home. You missed that whole day with them, and I know they hated it. So now that I'm able to have my pups with me at all times, it's amazing. It's really, really relaxing. I love seeing them happy, and it brings me a lot of enjoyment. So it's something that I've been working on, and I've been trying to figure it out for a long time. And I finally have come to realize that, I mean, if you want to do something, you manifest it. And I really wanted to work for myself. I was tired of working for the man. So I had this opportunity fall in my lap, and it was awesome. I mean, it didn't fall in my lap. I had to beat two people out for it, but at the same time, it was for the opportunity to be presented to me was a blessing. And then now that I'm here and I'm actually living this lifestyle, I mean, it's still a dream to me. I still can't believe that when I wake up every day and I see all these farm animals and I'm able to get my hands dirty in the garden or learn something from either Stacy or Becky about plants, it's awesome. To me, they always ask me if I need a day off. And honestly, if I'm out in the garden or I'm out in the sun or even just like going out and buying groceries or that for a dinner or even cooking for a dinner, like I don't really need a day off. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And it's to me, that's fulfilling, you know, it brings a lot of happiness to me. And I can't be more pleased, honestly.
I love that. Just very, you know, mindful and living presently.
Mm-hmm. It's just, just letting go of a lot of things that you think are, I mean, because even the smallest things, when you're a really busy person and you're frantically moving around, the smallest things can stress you out the most. And realizing, once you sit down and realize how small those things are, then it kind of puts the world into perspective. How often do people sit there and stress about the smallest things rather than taking the time to get the headspace cleared and focus on how to solve that problem or how to relieve that stress, you know? And here I'm able to do it. It's quite nice.
Because you're connecting with the nature and the animals.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, walking, they call it earthing it, but I walk around barefoot quite often around here. It brings you so much closer to the ground. And I mean, of course you step on a thistle here and there and you get one of those little screeches come out of your mouth, but
just screeches, that, right? Like, no profanity.
Yeah. No profanity.
No. No profanity. Wink, wink.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's and even like when we do these big events and whatnot, there's a little bit of stress that comes with it. But at the same time, like I'm doing what I love. I'm cooking. I'm cooking for people that are hungry, people that want to eat. So it's the audience isn't really that hard to make happy. I mean, unless you really scorched your food or you just don't use any seasonings, there's, in my eyes, there's really no way to make them unhappy unless you were to do that. But I mean, I believe in myself enough to where I don't think I'll ever do that. I hope I don't knock on wood right now, but
I think you're,
yeah, it's just, yeah. It's quite nice. Like when we do the comedy skits or the comedy night, I'm going to be out smoking meats. Like there's nothing better than that. You sit there and just watch a fire, watch meat get smoked. You wrap the meat, you visualize the whole process as it goes down. And not only that, each time you do it, you get better and better at it. You start learning how the fire works. You start learning the times of things, like the looks of the meat, and you'd be able to judge what's going on. And I can't wait for that to happen, as well as just like the overall knowledge of plants that Stacy, Becky, and the knowledge of animals that Chris and Travis have is just unreal. And this whole system is like, it's a gold mine. You can't get any rawer of ingredients as you do here. Yes. It's literally the best ingredients you can use. And for me, it's a gold mine. It's something that I have a lot to learn from. And I'm really excited about it. Just being hands-on as much as possible, or just using the ingredients that people never necessarily use, or just trying something new with ingredients, taking an animal and trying to manipulate its diet to get a different result. It's just, it's something that I think is going to be very beneficial for me in the future. I mean, in the next 10 years, I would love to have a restaurant, and I would like to utilize a lot of the knowledge that I gained here for that restaurant. So it's something that I'm very excited about.
I'm very excited too. I can't wait to follow you and of course eat all your yummy food along the way.
Yeah.
If I'm just trying to be honest with myself. Yes. How best can people follow you on social media then and connect with you? We've got your twicebakedprovisions.com. Again, we'll put that in the show notes. Also how they can connect with you elsewhere or else, you know what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Well, I have a Facebook page. I have a Facebook page as well as a Instagram page, Twice Baked Provisions. And those are the two main ones right now. I'm working on getting Twitter and everything set up. It's one thing at a time, but, yeah, Twice Baked Provisions on Instagram. It's probably your best bet.
Okay.
Yeah. And I try to post as often as I can, but I have a knack for focusing on what I'm doing and not taking pictures of what I'm doing. So I get chirped at quite often from my fan base about not posting enough pictures, which I'm working on. Sorry, yeah. Fan base. But so Instagram is probably your best bet.
Okay, good. Well, as you expand towards your vision, your team will come and one day you'll have someone that takes all those pictures for you.
Right. But,
Yeah. But in the meantime, and laughers, you can schedule those private chef services with Twice Baked Provisions. And you don't have to wait to experience a private chef experience because you can have his amazing food that he's going to prepare at the Outdoor Summer Fun Series at One Tribe Farm this summer, where we will have live music, an X2 comedy show, and fresh off the farm food prepared by Chef Jordan himself. This has been so much fun, hasn't it, Chef Jordan?
Yes, it has. Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast talking to you, as always.
Oh, it is such a blast. We talked about my favorite topics, food and wine, and oh, this is so exciting. I enjoyed it so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. And laughers, we invite you to, again, enjoy some of Chef Jordan's yummy food by hiring him yourself and enjoy his delicious creations. Once again, you can do that One Tribe Farms Outdoor Summer Fun Series. He and we hope to see you there. Thanks for listening today. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.